The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, HGTV Gardens e-newsletter, Dave's Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from Jerry Baker's terrific garden tonic. We'll start with the Garden Smart e-newsletter. And this is Year of the Snapdragon. Looking for a flower that has multiple uses in the garden? Smells great, attracts pollinators, and comes in scads of colors? Then you should be planting snapdragons. For some gardeners, snapdragon is one of those flowers that evokes memories of their parents' or grandparents' garden. It is a nostalgic plant that can foster an emotional tie to the past. Tall varieties can be used as fresh cuts in floral arrangements, and dwarf and medium varieties can be used in containers and garden plantings. Snapdragons are native to the Mediterranean region and parts of the Middle East and North Africa. Snapdragons are usually grown as an annual in most U.S. gardens, even though plants are winter hardy to USDA zones 7 through 10. The genus name, Antirrhinum, comes from the Greek words anti, meaning like, and rhin, meaning nose or snout, which describes the shape of the flowers. There are also varieties that have unique double and open flowers. The dragon-shaped, tubular flowers come in a variety of colors, including pastels and bicolors. With the bicolors, the throat is usually white, and the lip of the flowers is another color. The only flower color that is not available is a true blue. Generally, snapdragons are treated as annuals because they're not that hardy. However, for southern gardeners, snapdragons usually last longer when they are used in the fall. As temperatures start to rise later in the spring in the south, flowering typically slows down or stops. In moderate climates, like what occurs in Midwest states, plants will stop flowering under warmer summer temperatures or produce only a few flowers. Once the temperatures cool off, plants start to flower again. Although long days of summer can enhance flowering, warm temperatures can cause flowering to really drop off and plants may go semi-dormant. One day temperatures remain in the 80s, flowering tends to slow down. If temperatures become too hot, plants may not survive. Flowering period can be prolonged if spent flowers are removed from the plants. Snapdragons can also be used for a biennial culture, like pansies. In moderate climates, if snapdragons are planted in fall and left in the garden where the plants don't die back, they can develop as robust spring plants. Snapdragons are attractive to pollinators, including hummingbirds, bumblebees, and other larger-sized bees. They're not the best honeybee attractor because the flowers are a little heavy for the bees to access. Snapdragons are not a preferred food choice for deer and rabbits. Snapdragons come in a range of heights. Dwarf, 6 to 10 inches tall, 10 to 12 inches wide. Medium, 16 to 24 inches tall, 12 to 18 inches wide, and tall, 24 to 30 inches tall, 14 to 16 inches wide. Dwarf types are currently the most common snapdragons found at garden centers. The compact habit makes them ideal for sales in packs and pots and for multiple applications in garden plantings and in containers for porch and patio. Dwarf series include Candy Tops, Crackle and Pop, Floral Showers, Palette, Snappy, Snapshot, 20, and the newest introduction, Snaptini. Snaptini was bred to flower more easily under short day lengths during winter early spring, and late fall. Snaptini plants have stronger flower stems that are less likely to break in the garden. Medium series include Liberty Tech Classic, Solstice, Speedy Sonnet, and Sonnet. Tall series include Madam Butterfly and Rocket. Snaptastic is a new type of intermediate height snapdragon, combining the bushy habit of dwarfs and taller flower stems typical of medium types. Snaptastic offers better branching in the garden and requires less staking, but retains the classic look of traditional snapdragons. Candy Showers series is unique as the first trailing snapdragon series from seeds. It is ideal for hanging baskets, window boxes, and patio containers. Because snapdragons can tolerate cold temperatures, they're often one of the first flowers, along with pansies, violas, and early spring perennials and bulb crops that gardeners plant in spring. In the garden, tall types should be staked as needed to prevent them from falling over and breaking. They can become top-heavy because of their large flowers. Removing dead flowers should be done to ensure flowers keep initiating. If plants start to set too much seed, the plants just peter out. Removing old flowers can help prevent gray mold disease. Managing water is important, especially if gardeners are growing the medium to tall types. The plants have a fibrous root system, and if they don't become established in the soil, they will fall over. Snapdragons should be fertilized like other bedding plants. If you're looking for flowers with multiple colors, different flower shapes, different sizes, and great fragrance, you cannot go wrong with planting snapdragons. Next, from the HGTV Gardens e-newsletter, easiest vegetables to grow in flower pots. It's easy to grow vegetables like tomatoes, lettuce, squash, strawberries, and more in containers. Just be mindful of the size of your pots as well as your plants. Growing vegetables in pots. Almost any fruit or vegetable plant can be grown in a container, provided your container is large enough. You can easily grow herbs, peppers, tomatoes, onions, summer squash, beans, and eggplant in summer, as well as broccoli, cabbage, lettuce, and greens in spring and fall. Choose smaller varieties. It helps to choose varieties specifically bred for small spaces. Look for variety names and descriptions, including these words: bush, dwarf, patio, trailing, compact, and miniature. We have a container filled with Tumbling Tom Tomato, a beautiful compact trailing variety ideally suited for containers. Container size matters. Most vegetables need fairly large containers to grow well. The best containers for vegetables are 12 to 18 inches wide and 18 to 24 inches deep. As a rule of thumb, the bigger the eventual size of the plant, the bigger pot you need. A Roma tomato variety called Little Napoli, even though it is a compact plant, it still benefits from a deep container where roots can stretch out. Lettuce. Lettuce is an exception to the size rule. Because it has shallow roots, lettuce grows well in nearly every container, including ones with as little depth as 6 to 8 inches. Lettuce grows best in cooler weather, so sow seeds in spring or fall. To grow in summer, keep lettuce in part shade. Peppers. Peppers, both hot and sweet, grow easily in containers. Try them on their own or surrounded by flowers in a larger pot. Tomatoes. Upright tomatoes will grow well in larger pots with a cage or stake, but you can also try small tumbling cherry varieties in hanging baskets or window boxes. The tumbler called Torenzo reaches only 16 to 20 inches tall and wide. Strawberries. Strawberries grow so well in containers that they have their own pots. Specialized strawberry pots and planters have pockets on the sides where fruit can grow and cascade without touching the ground, which can cause berries to rot. As their name suggests, strawberry pots are ideal for growing strawberries. Summer squash. Summer squash and zucchini will grow well in containers. These plants do get large, but do not produce long vines like winter squash, which is better suited to growing in the ground or raised beds. You can even try corn. Though it is not the easiest vegetable to grow in pots, it is certainly possible. Again, we recommend looking for dwarf varieties. Now from Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Why Dandelions Are the Best Weed to Have in Your Garden by Shannon McKee. As soon as you start seeing dandelions in the garden, it's time to reach for the weed spray, right? Before you start to kill off the dandelions in your yard, you'll want to read about all the different benefits that they have to offer. You may be surprised to find out that dandelions are wonderful for the environment, and that they are used to make a bunch of tasty treats in the kitchen. First food for wildlife. Dandelions are fantastic because they are one of the first foods available to bees after a long winter. On top of that, they are also great for other insects and birds in your ecosystem. Of course, you should not feel that you have to keep them around just for the wildlife. Which is why you'll be happy to hear that dandelions are also great for people. Dandelion green salad. The dandelion greens you see popping up around the flower are actually pretty tasty when eaten young. Not only are they edible, but they offer some great health benefits. More specifically, these leaves are full of essential vitamins and antioxidants. Did you know that you can get more beta-carotene out of these leaves than you can out of carrots? They are also quite high in vitamin K. Not too bad for a pesky weed. Dandelion root drink. Dandelion roots are used in a number of different ways. Some people dry them and grind them up to create a caffeine-free coffee substitute for themselves. This drink is said to have an earthy flavor. Other people make it into a tea that helps with digestion. Versatile dandelion flowers. Like the roots, the flowers of the dandelion can also be used in a variety of ways. Some people like to make a jelly out of them, which itself is said to taste similar to honey. If you are not a fan of jelly, there are also recipes available to turn your dandelion flowers into a sweet and natural syrup for waffles and pancakes. The best part is that this syrup is not overwhelmingly sweet like some store-bought brands. Alternately, you can use dandelion flowers to make wine. To do so, you just need to loosely fill a gallon container with the flowers. Next, add some raisins, lemon zest, and water to the container. You'll have to let this mixture ferment over a few months, but then it'll be time for some wine. There are also quite a few dandelion-based baked good recipes out there you can experiment with. These yield tasty treats like dandelion cookies and dandelion blossom cake. The kitchen isn't the only place where you can use dandelion flowers. They can also be used to make lotion, lip balm, and salves. Some find dandelion lotion to be a particularly good source of relief when it comes to sore muscles. Historically, dandelion was used as a diuretic and to treat eye inflammation. Finally, the flowers of dandelions can be used to create a natural dye. This dye is perfect for people that homestead with sheep or goats and want to dye their wool naturally. However, it can also be used on any other fabric. Picking the right dandelions. If you're planning on using your neighborhood dandelions for cooking, it's important to be selective about the ones you use. You'll want to make sure they have not been treated with any kinds of chemicals before picking them. In addition, you may want to stay away from dandelions near roadways or other areas where there may be increased air pollution exposure. It is also important to think about what parts of the dandelion you want to use. If you plan on eating the greens, you'll want to get them early in their growth cycle. This is because the longer the leaves are left growing, the more bitter they become. For those that plan on using dandelions for a more medicinal purpose, fall is typically the best time to harvest, and you'll want to remove the roots carefully when you do. This is best done on a rainy day when the soil is moist. One final note when it comes to picking your dandelions is to make sure that it's permissible in your area. You're okay in your yard, but if you go elsewhere, you'll have to ask for permission before picking any. It may be necessary to check and see if there are any foraging laws in your town if you plan on picking them on public lands. This short list outlines just a few of the potential uses for what may consider a worthless lead. Do not reach for your weed killer before exploring all of the different options you have when it comes to using dandelions. This weed's sunny disposition is sure to brighten up your kitchen, health, and beauty routine. Next, why grow a clover lawn by Tricia Drevitz. How would you like to have a lawn that's low maintenance, drought tolerant, and practically weed free? If this sounds like a dream come true, you should consider growing a clover lawn. However, you'll want to understand the basics of the plant before you walk out the door and start buying seeds. First, it's important to note that there are various kinds of clover. Some notable ones are white, also called Dutch clover, red and crimson. Crimson clover is an annual plant that boasts colorful blooms and can grow up to 3 feet tall. Farmers use it to replenish nutrients in the soil. Red clover is biennial and grows 2 to 3 feet in height, while clover like others, white clover like the others, is a perennial that can be overseeded or reseeded every few years. It can be mowed and is tolerant of heat and sun, much like regular grass. Advantages of growing a clover lawn. As alluded to earlier, there are several benefits. For instance, clover can naturally aerate the soil by pulling nitrogen from the air. Clover's roots also extend deep underground, which gives it access to water supplies that other plants can't reach. Naturally, this makes the plant less dependent on regular watering. With stems that reach a maximum height of about 6 inches, clover won't require much mowing either. You'll be glad to learn mature clover aggressively competes for resources with neighboring plants and consequently does a great job of keeping invasive weeds off of your lawn. Lastly, clover flowers attract honeybees, insects with their own set of gardening and environmental perks. Drawbacks of clover. There are a few potential deterrents to consider before deciding on clover. If, for example, a lot of people tend to walk directly on your lawn, it's important to know clover cannot withstand high foot traffic as well as grass can. Many people choose to install stepping stones or gravel paths to avoid unnecessary trampling. While you may not want anyone stepping on your lawn, you definitely don't want them doing so barefoot. It's easier to unknowingly step on a bee in clover lawns. Choosing to grow several white clover plants in the same area can also create problems, as they can sometimes start to compete against each other for water. Get yourself off to a strong start by investing in quality white clover seeds. After buying seeds, rake the soil you're going to be planting them in until it is as flat as possible. Using a wheelbarrow for a bowl, mix the clover seed in with some soil until it looks like you have about 4 seeds per square inch. Spread evenly across your lawn. Cover with a 1/4 inch layer of soil or straw to keep the ground moist as the seeds start to germinate. Avoid walking on the newly seeded area for at least a week. Remember to maintain soil moisture with light, regular watering. Clover sprouts should appear on your lawn within 2 weeks. From this point on, you can start watering less. In fact, after your lawn matures, you should not water it more than once a week. Just be sure to water deeply when you do, as it discourages the roots to reach further down into the soil. And from the State by State Gardener e-newsletter, we have some events coming up. On July 13th in Raleigh, North Carolina, Introduction to Mushroom Foraging. Learn a year's worth of wild edible mushrooms in one day at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Learn several easy-to-identify, tasty mushrooms that can be found in different seasons. There will be slides, guides, and tools on display. Generous Q&A, and participants will receive a resource guide, taught by Frank Hyman, a graduate who writes a foraging column for Paleo Magazine and has licenses to market wild mushrooms in 3 states, and once picked a 33-pounder. He studied foraging in 7 states and 6 countries. It's from 9 to 11 a.m. The cost is $40, members $30. Registration is required, and they have 24 spaces. For more information, call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005. Also, on July 13th in Raleigh, Introduction to Growing Citrus in North Carolina, also at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Find out how to grow citrus in the ground or in pots. It's possible to grow expensive lemons outside without protection. Clementines, kumquats, and Meyer lemons can be harvested indoors even in winter, as well as providing fragrant evergreen foliage and flowers. There will be slides, generous Q&A, and participants will receive a resource guide. Taught by Frank Hyman, a graduate and landscaper who writes Hobby Farm Magazine's Cutting Edge Crops column and has a potted dwarf citrus 30 years old in Durham. This will be from 1 to 2:30 p.m., and it's $30, members $25. Registration is required, and there are 24 spaces. For more information, call 919-513-7005. 919-513-7005. And on July the 16th in Durham, North Carolina, the 2019 Gardeners' Fair at Sarah P. Duke Gardens. Learn from local experts and retailers, see demonstrations, and join lectures. The forum usually meets once a month to discuss garden techniques and issues. From 6:30 to 8 p.m., the cost is $10 and free. Registration is not required. For more information, email durhamgardenforum@gmail.com. And July 17 through the 20th in Callaway, North Carolina, the 2019 Callaway Native Plants Conference at Western Carolina University. This annual conference, the 36th, works to increase interest in preserving and landscaping with native plants and propagates horticultural techniques for growing natives. On July 16th, it's from 5 to 9 p.m. July 17th, it's from 7 to 9 p.m. July 18th, from 7 to 10 p.m. July 19th, from 7 p.m. to 12 a.m. July 19th, also from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's $140 before July 1st, and there are additional fees for optional activities. Educational scholarships are offered. Registration is required. For more information, please call 828-227-7397. 828-227-7397. And now from Jerry Baker's terrific garden tonics. No Mow Nematodes Tonic. When is a disease not due to a fungus, bacteria, or a virus? When it's called by little critters called nematodes. These colorless, microscopic worms usually live in the soil, although some can climb up on plants. Say no to pesky nematodes with this simple solution. The ingredients: 1 can of beer and 1 cup of molasses. Instructions: mix these ingredients in a 20-gallon hose-end sprayer and thoroughly soak any area where nasty nematodes are doing their dirty work. It'll stop these pests in their tracks. And a bubble bath for your bloomers. I cannot say this often enough. Giving your plants a good washing before applying liquid fertilizers, weed killers, or pest controls can mean the difference between a garden that's just getting by and one that is healthy and growing. Why? Soap removes dust, dirt, and pollen from foliage pores, enabling plants to better take up the good stuff that follows. So, before you apply fertilizers or controls, give your bloomers a bath with 1 cup of dishwashing liquid applied with a 20-gallon hose-end sprayer. And ask Jerry, my plants look wilted even though they're getting plenty of water. How can I tell if nematodes are to blame? Answer, above ground, the only symptom you may see of root-feeding nematodes is stunted or wilted leaves and shoots. But when you dig up the plants, you'll notice tiny galls all over the roots. Or if foliar nematodes are at work, you'll see wedge-shaped sections of leaf that turn yellowish-brown between the veins. Dig up and destroy seriously affected plants. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.